No person has faced what I have faced. The Imam said, I used to think that the ruler oppresses the people, but now the people oppress the ruler. So these are things which have been narrated from Imam Ali regarding himself. And the greatest service that we can do for, or the help that we can, you know, do for Imam Ali and to kind of cancel out, you know, what was, you know, committed against him, is for us to follow his advice that he gave to us, and to, you know, listen to his suggestions and his advice that he gave to us as his followers. Imam Ali is reported to have said, verily, I do not encourage you to perform any act of obedience without performing it myself first, nor do I prohibit you from any sin without first refraining from it myself. Right? What a great leader we had, and what a great loss we incurred on this, in these grave nights. Thank you for joining us here on Hadith of the Day. We were looking at the virtues of Imam Ali and the oppression that he faced after the death of the Prophet, in his own words. Until next time, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Dr. Shiraz Hossein Agha for the program Hadith of the Day on RIB English Radio. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad.
This one lay.
Doing a sound from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
The UK court has approved the extradition of Julian Assange to the US. The UK Home Secretary will decide on this fate. In this edition of The Spotlight, we will look at issues related to Assange, such as the freedom of speech, the accusation itself, whether it should be called espionage, given the depth of the revelations, why it is that Assange is being punished for revealing the ones who have committed the felony or the murders. Where is the justice in that? Well, first, let's get an idea from our correspondent, Rob Carter, who joins us from London to tell us more about this. Rob Carter, at this point, things just don't look too good. Anybody that perhaps is on social media or otherwise is not very optimistic about this. Tell us more about, the steps before a final decision is going to be taken.
Yes, of course. Well, it is important to realize that this decision doesn't mean that all of the legal options for Assange's team have been exhausted. Let's make that absolutely clear. So, of course, a major blow in the years-long fight for Assange to essentially not be extradited to the US on espionage charges, that has taken a major development today. However, the decision now goes towards the British government. Priti Patel, the Home Secretary, will be making that decision. But over the next 4 weeks, Assange's legal team can make appeals and submissions to the Home Secretary in order to basically plead their case to try and convince her to rule in their favour still. So the fight isn't actually over. But of course, a lot of people are deeply worried about which way the Home Secretary will rule on this, especially because she has a reputation for kicking as many people out of the UK as she possibly can, in particular refugees and so on. So obviously she has a bit of a reputation for shipping people outside of the UK. Will this case, however, be taken differently? That is the big question. And of course, there is a lot at stake here. Freedom of speech, freedoms for journalists to report on state corruption. And of course, let's remember that on the one side, the US side, they're arguing that, hey, Julian Assange, he conducted criminal activities and basically put the state secrets out there in the public, which he shouldn't have done, risking national security. But then on the other side of that argument, Julian Assange has literally done his job as a journalist, and a lot of the information that was leaked by WikiLeaks was of great public interest, especially in regards to military wrongdoing by the West in countries like Iraq and Afghanistan. So a massive story here, but it's far from over, I think. And we have to be clear that the fight for Assange's freedom is still ongoing.
Okay, thank you very much for that. That is Rob Carter, correspondent from London. Let me now introduce our guest for this edition of The Spotlight. Scott Bennett, former U.S. Army psychological warfare officer, joins us from San Francisco. Also joining us, Mick Napier, activist and commentator, who joins us from Edinburgh.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Welcome to you both. Let me first start with you, Mick Napier, looking at what has happened, a formal approval for the extradition of Julian Assange to the U.S. on espionage charges, the fate to be decided by the U.K. Home Secretary Priti Patel. What's your reaction upon hearing this?
He's a journalist. And when this material was released by WikiLeaks, Chelsea Manning spent 7 years in a U.S. prison for their part in that. This was picked up by journalists in The Guardian and other prominent media around the world who made a lot of money out of what Julian Assange and WikiLeaks were revealing. Circulation went up. And these journalists who were very happy to take what Julian Assange made available to them have largely turned their backs on him. I think this is a grim, grim day. Who can forget, who has ever seen it, the footage which WikiLeaks showed of a US Apache helicopter, I think it was, killing Reuters journalists and civilians in a street in Iraq. And then when later a vehicle comes to pick up the bodies, they were also shot at and killed as well. So I think what's happening is a journalist who's done a fantastic job of revealing that which our rulers would wish to remain hidden has been treated extremely cruelly. He's been tortured in Belmarsh prison in high security isolation for the last 3 years, but the man's a journalist. What he's done is what other journalists who were worth anything would dream of doing. And the fact that he's being extradited is nothing more revenge. It's revenge by the Pentagon, which our other guest might shed much more light on than I can, but it's certainly revenge by the US establishment, aided and abetted by their British counterparts, for something which they could never forgive. And mm-hmm. that is the revelation of terrible war crimes against the people of Iraq and Afghanistan. And we have to put this in context. This intervention in Iraq was something which someone who died recently, an ex-US Secretary of State, had said on one occasion, 500,000 deaths through sanctions was a price worth paying, and that was even before the war started.
Right.
So this is a grotesque crime which Assange has revealed, and for being a wonderful journalist, he's now going to be sentenced to life in the American prison system, which is so horrific, I don't even want to think about it.
Sure. Well, Scott Bennett, I'm not too sure how to approach this with you because, you know, it says that there's a decision that needs to be made. It's then the possible extradition to the U.S. I mean, that extradition to the U.S., it is stated that this is going to be then reviewed in a U.S. court, and then come to find out the U.S. court is actually an espionage court. So it's almost like a kangaroo court in which the verdict most likely and most definitely is going to be the guilty verdict. And maybe all of this could be just really being not staged, but some are saying that, you know, the U.K. is going to okay this and Assange is going to get extradited to the U.S. Tell us how you really see this moving forward based on what has now occurred.
Well, I think the entire life of Western freedom and Western truth in journalism hangs in the balance with the imprisonment and death of Assange, which is most likely. So will be the imprisonment and death of all American journalists, indeed all American citizens, in fear of this tyranny police state that is cancerously morphing in the West. So Julian Assange is much bigger than his particular case. He represents and symbolizes the expected rights and freedoms and truth of the entire Western civilization, which is becoming a laughable mockery and not at all reflective of reality. As the mockery and the, as you wisely identified, the kangaroo court of this silly charge against Assange has absolutely no basis in law. It has no basis in truth. It is a revenge act, and it is an act of violence upon every free American, free person indeed in the world. And journalists are to be the vanguards of truth and expose government and power when it is run amok. And that is what Julian Assange did. That's indeed what one of my colleagues did, Edward Snowden, who I worked with at Booz Allen Hamilton, when he was exposing Swiss bank financing of terrorism through the Biden-Obama administration. And Ed Snowden, who worked with me at Booz Allen, left the country because he knew what was coming. Julian Assange tried to flee the persecution, and they, you know, captured him and have imprisoned him for the better part of a decade and tortured him. Your Scottish colleague is very accurate in his analysis. They have tortured Assange, and they have sought to destroy him. I do not expect any justice or honor from Priti Patel. I think that judge is indeed going to be ruthlessly savage in the destruction of truth and rights, and he will be extradited. But of course, there's always hope that the world's population will rise up and demand and challenge and perhaps overthrow these tyrannical governments in America, in Britain, as you see in elsewhere in Western civilization. So the espionage court, the espionage charges have no basis in reality. They have no legal footing. We may see Bradley Manning, who calls himself Chelsea Manning, called to testify in defense of Julian Assange, which could obliterate charges. We may even see, hopefully, any Western politicians standing up and demanding Julian Assange be pardoned, that indeed all charges be dropped. Because if you can do this to Julian Assange for speaking the truth about war crimes that the United States has engaged in from Afghanistan, Iraq, Libya, Syria, the list goes on,
right,
then you can oppress and kill every person that speaks the truth.
Okay, we're going to review some things that I believe that needs to be reviewed, perhaps again, McNabb here. And one of them is, Scott Bennett actually mentioned there, is the charge itself, espionage, in the context of what Julian Assange did. Because of the content of what was revealed, is there justification in the accusations brought against Assange? Because we know that, obviously, that revealed what the U.S. government did in particular, which, in the case of Iraq and Afghanistan, could amount to war crimes. Do you believe that this espionage label that has been given to Assange is justified for him then to go through this judicial proceeding?
Well, look, it's not a case of looking at the dictionary, but what does espionage mean? Espionage means revealing secrets which the government doesn't want to be revealed, usually in the service of a foreign power. Julian Assange revealed secrets which the US government did not want to be revealed in the interest of US citizens and those of us around the world who were being kept in the dark about the extreme gravity of these crimes. Now, we knew about a lot of stuff. We knew that, for example, in Scotland, that prisoners were being transferred through Presbury Care for torture in various parts of the world on behalf of the British and the Americans. We knew it, but we didn't have the smoking gun. We knew that anybody who's not a fool knows that terrible crimes were being committed in Iraq and Afghanistan, but we didn't have the smoking gun. Assange provided the film footage. We saw it, and it was so graphic and so disturbing and impossible for spin merchants to spin. That's the gravity of his crime in the eyes of the Pentagon and the US elite. No, it's nothing to do with law. It's to do with revealing secrets which the state did not want to have revealed. And revenge is the entirety of the story. And I think I usually try to avoid hyperbole, but in this case, I think the situation is so grave that a brave journalist is about to be murdered, judicially murdered, using the appalling US prison industrial complex, and we need to stand by him. Everybody needs to stand by him. And I think his only hope is an absolutely aroused and enraged public opinion at the moment in Britain. Now, remember, this man was detained and charged on charges of sexual assault, which were very sinister indeed, coming from Sweden, and those charges were dropped when they had served their purpose. When he was being detained in Britain, he offered to stand trial in Sweden if he was guaranteed he would not be extradited to the USA. That is, if the Swedish government would say, this is a case of an alleged sexual assault, and it will be dealt with as that. The Swedish government refused to give him that guarantee, and he knew that if he went to Sweden, he would be pushed onward to the USA. The British government did not ask for such a guarantee, so we had all along this whole thing smells of a terrible, terrible, partly conspiracy. Something's taking place in the dark, but largely in front of our eyes, where this man is right. Being ground down by various governments for a very clear activity on our behalf. Can I just say one thing? We owe him very, very big. And because we owe him for revealing these secrets, it's our duty to come to his support.
Well, as Scott Bennett, our guest there, mentioned the phrase smoking gun, which I think exactly is what happened when we saw that video years ago. But what came of it? I mean, you have a smoking gun revealing these so-called secrets of which we know that the U.S., for example, is guilty of, and yet we're having those types of what has amounted to war crimes, as you mentioned, in countries like Syria, Iraq, Afghanistan, still continue. I mean, even the U.S. comes out and says, you know, this is collateral damage when it comes to the killing of civilians. So what good did the smoking gun do if those types of crimes continue and get repeated?
Well, the smoking gun of Julian Assange's revelations was really, from a military perspective, a very small, isolated incident, which I would say could have been, apologetically presented. It could have been spun by the military in a different way. Instead, that exposure set in motion a domino effect of responses and antagonisms and aggression by the U.S. military, by the Central Intelligence Agency, by the Department of Justice, by the White House, by various war crime, Zionist neocon lunatics on Capitol Hill, that all saw this as a challenge to the American empire. And never forget, the American empire, the military-industrial complex, the Zionists, the British have all been pushing for this world full-spectrum dominance against countries that stand against it, Iran, Russia, China. So Julian Assange was a flare in the sky that the U.S. responded to with all instruments of its national power. And it's fascinatingly hypocritical that President Donald Trump, who earned his, or actually won the presidency largely because of the revelations of WikiLeaks and Julian Assange revealing the corruption in the Clinton and the Biden Obama administrations, Donald Trump never issued a pardon, as he should have. That's shameful. And Julian Assange deserves a pardon. He deserves to be set free. He deserves nothing of what has happened to him, because he was standing up for truth for all people around the world. There is no freedom if the government grants it to you. There is only freedom when the people rise up and control the governments that they create. That was the premise of the American founding. But it is morphed into a police state after the World Trade Center attacks in 2001. That was used as a military juggernaut. It was based on complete lies and fabrications, but that was used to set in motion this military juggernaut into Afghanistan, into Iraq, into Libya, into Syria. They were planning on 7 countries in 5 years. And that's what Julian Assange stood up against by just identifying one particular incident. And the overreaction shows us just how fragile and desperate and really mentally incoherent the American empire, the American government, the American military really is. And you see that in their silly adventures in Ukraine and elsewhere. So the empire of the West is really crumbling, and Julian Assange set that in motion by not only identifying truth, but triggering the West to overreact. Every nation and every journalist around the world should be looking at the United States as a monstrous deformity of what it previously claimed to represent. It is not a light sitting on a hill. It is a black hole of darkness that sucks into it and destroys everything that stands for light, everything that stands for truth, everything that stands for human rights, everything that stands for sovereignty and the equilibrium of freedom and free nations. The United States stands against that and is the opposite of that. And it saddens me to say it, having served the United States in the military and my father before me, we are witnessing America deform into a Frankenstein cannibalistic monstrosity that is obsessed with devouring the nations of the world, subjugating them by all means necessary, including bioweapon chemical labs, as they've been developing in Ukraine, that's been revealed. But it has to exterminate truth and truth tellers. So they will, no doubt, exterminate, torture Julian Assange as a marker for the rest of the world to try and intimidate the world. Hopefully the world will rise up and throw off that intimidation, and you will see a reverse impact. So perhaps Julian Assange will be one of the greatest heroes of truth and reignite an awakening in all Western civilized peoples.
Nick Napier, when we started this discussion, you talked about how it's a sad day for the journalists that actually used Assange's information or release and made lots of money over it, that they are not rising up to his cause at this point. And our guest there talks about how the world needs to rise up. What can be done in order for the attention, the proper attention, be given here to maybe, for there to maybe be a chance to stop what is going to happen, especially if he does get extradited to the U.S., which the prospects look very grim, because as many are concluding, the U.S. has to make an example of Assange so that other whistleblowers don't come forward.
Well, you know, he can only go to the States, and I think when that happens, it'll be lost. But he can only leave Britain if a lot of people cooperate. Priti Patel is a monstrous figure who has been in favor of driving would-be asylum seekers back into the sea to come to Britain. She's really somebody who will try to get him to the States in every way possible. But, you know, sometimes when she's been expelling refugees and trying to get them back to some country in Africa, pilots have refused to fly them. They have refused to take off in an aircraft while people are in shackles and have been forced onto their aircraft unwillingly. There are many ways this can be stopped, but it will need a very aroused, determined, and organized public opinion. Because if Assange goes to the States, we will all be diminished. And that's the whole point of it. When somebody is taken from our ranks, when every journalist is told, this can happen to you if you ever use information of which we disapprove, then That's the problem. We will be diminished. Journalists have been massively diminished already. I mean, we talk in Britain about a free press, but it's a free press if you can get an oligarch to sponsor you. Otherwise, we're back to social media. The areas for free and open discussion in Britain, in the British press, which once were real, have been closed down over the last 20 or 30 years. Some of the giant figures would now be impossible because there's simply no space for them.
Okay.
And Assange is a litmus test. We need all good men and women have to come to the aid of Julian Assange.
Final question goes to you, Scott Bennett. What do you think the chances are going to be of Assange getting extradited to the U.S. and what will happen there, in your opinion?
I think it's 100% guaranteed he'll be extradited because the British government and judiciary are slaves and pawns and robots to the empire, the Anglo empire, the Atlanticist empire. And your guest is right. What should happen is every newspaper and journalistic entity should pull out of the United States, and you should have a massive sanctioning of the United States. No American should be welcome in any sporting event, much as they're trying to do to other nationalities, including Russian. The only way to stop this devouring of the world is to stop the devourer of the world and to sanction it and to withdraw from it and ignore it and turn away from it. And it's a sad day, but otherwise, okay, all freedoms, all people will be in danger.
Very well. Thank you so much for that. Scott Bennett, former U.S. Army Psychological Warfare Officer from San Francisco. Nick Napier, thank you. Activist and commentator from Edinburgh. And with that, we come to an end for this edition of The Spotlight. From Mikhail Vitakhovay, it's goodbye. Until next time.
This is A to Z. An Introduction to Islamic Lifestyle. Today's lesson, the level higher than the jurisprudential fasting. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, in the name of Allah, the Most Beneficent, the Most Merciful. Dear brothers and sisters, Assalamu alaikum. Peace and blessings of Allah be upon you all. This is A to Z, coming to you from IRIB English Radio, and I'm your host, Ali. Brothers and sisters, we know that there are different classifications of every ibadah that we do. When it comes to fasting, there are three different levels that we're discussing. The first one is the jurisprudential fasting, which is the bare minimum, the lowest level of one, keeping a valid fast. Now, today we want to discuss the next level, which is a level higher than the jurisprudential fasting. Because really, honestly, this is what we should be doing in our lives. We should be moving from A to B to C to D, right? From step 1 to 2 to 3 to 4, the level 1, 2, 3, 4. So same thing with the fasting, right? We should be moving up the ladder. A faster at this level is expected to think why he or she is told to refrain from eating and drinking, which are essential nutrition for his or her body. You know, this thought should occupy them, that why am I supposed to not do certain things in this blessed month, and why have I been asked not to perform those actions which otherwise in rest of the months are okay to perform. You know, this is a thought which actually would be a good start for, especially for the youth. Could it be that by refraining from consuming the essentials, I learn to more easily refrain from unnecessary and even harmful inputs to my body and soul? Now, this could be another good question and a rhetoric answer, you would say, that, you know, a person observing this higher level of fast, you know, fulfilling the requirements of that other basic level that we discussed previously, you know, this person is now trying to fathom and understand the hikmah and the wisdom behind the fasting, okay? And this is that one step further. And we'll continue discussing this after a short break. Welcome back, dear listeners. Today we are discussing a higher level of fasting when compared to the jurisprudential level, which is the basic lowest level. Now, once this person who's fasting successfully finishes a month of Sharia fasting, which is the jurisprudential fasting, by refraining from soft drinks, let's say, and halal food, and even finds him or herself healthier than before, the faster should find it easier by far to avoid intoxicants or haram foods, which are even harmful for his or her body and does not really require. You know, it's not something that our body asks for. There are so many of those things that we consume day in, day out, where we know that they are not the requirement, the natural requirement of our body. So what the blessed month of Ramadan does is to this fasting person, it makes them realize that it's not like they're dependent on these extra things that they're consuming or performing, okay? Once a faster is aware of such fasts, they will be ready to enter the higher level of fasting, which can be called the fasting of al-tariqat, right? So this is a level which is the next level to the jurisprudential fasting, you know, where you are thinking about the philosophy of fasting, where you're trying to figure out and fathom the requirements and why you have been asked to refrain from certain things. And it's a whole different level. If you can sense it intellectually and using your intellect, you would see that, okay, there's something more to it. It's not just the will of Allah to keep me hungry and thirsty. No, Allah wills something more from this act of fasting. Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, thank you very much for staying with us till the end of today's episode of A to Z. Don't forget to log on to our website at parstoday.com, Call of Islam page. We leave you all in the care of Allah. Till next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Said Puriza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Said Amin Olemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
The French presidential election is being described as a populist bloc of Marine Le Pen versus an elitist bloc of Emmanuel Macron, but many don't seem to want to join either group. The first round's third-place finisher held an internal poll. Almost 70% of his leftist supporters will either abstain or submit blank ballots rather than vote for either candidate. France's Muslims don't see a choice which isn't Islamophobic. Macron continues to support bashing Islamo-leftism, while Le Pen has an on-again, off-again plan to give fines for wearing the hijab in public. The student class isn't taking sides either. They recently blocked universities over what they say are two bad candidates. The elder class may provide the key vote. Back when he expected an easy victory, Macron promised to raise the retirement age to 65. Now he's backtracking in an effort to win over left-wing voters, but many aren't sure what his true plans really are.
Le bilan d'Emmanuel Macron n'est pas forcément positif.
Macron's record isn't very positive. Long-term unemployment, economic instability, the destabilizing effects of the yellow vests. People have many different reasons for being disappointed with him.
In 2017, the two mainstream parties were swept out of power, but the repeat second-round matchup has many voters upset that new ideas remain absent.
La ligne conservatrice réactionnaire.
The conservative and reactionary line is championed by Le Pen, but she's very divisive. Many of her electorate preferred Eric Zemmour in the first round, and then there are many mainstream conservatives who will never vote for her or the National Rally. The key traits of this vote are bitter abstention and bored indecisiveness.
Most polls show Macron leading by around 6 to 8 points, but that's within the margin of error, and Western polls have consistently undercounted the right nationalist candidate. The runoff is on April 24th. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
There are many security experts who claim the expansion of NATO in recent years close to Russia's borders and provocative military exercises are factors that brought about the conflict in Ukraine. Now EU members Finland and Sweden are poised to announce they want to join NATO. One analyst has been giving us his reaction via broadband.
That's a very serious escalation toward Russia, because this is when the United States will put nuclear bombs in Finland, and that would mean a direct escalation that Russia will not accept.
Finland shares a border with Russia that is more than 1,300 kilometres long. Moscow points out that if this country was to join the 30-nation alliance, NATO's land border with the Russian Federation would more than double in length. A new opinion poll by Le Soir newspaper has found that 90% of citizens surveyed in Belgium said the war worries them, but that they do not support direct military intervention over concerns that it could trigger a new world war. A quarter of those questioned said the West's supply of weapons to fighters in Ukraine is, quote, a bad thing. We have also been asking members of the public about this.
Yeah, I think we should stop doing that, huh? Because war... fights war and then ends up in more war. So it's more about like discussing, talking.
It's a very good thing to have a dialogue with Russians and hopefully sort this out without war.
Ideally, diplomacy is the way that this comes to an end, but it takes two sides. From what I'm reading, they don't want to negotiate at all yet.
On Tuesday, the European Commission defended the decisions taken by EU governments to send arms to Ukraine.
In this case, more weapons doesn't mean more war. More weapons for Ukraine means more ability for the Ukrainian army to defend its people.
As concerns over possible escalation continue to increase, Finland and Sweden are expected to announce, before the end of this month, if they intend to join NATO. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
People in the west of Afghan capital Kabul were once again terrified after three explosions hit an educational center and a high school, leaving dozens of people dead and injured. Soon after the attack, we rushed Abdulrahim Shahid High School to talk with eyewitnesses.
After the first explosion, I arrived at the scene. Then suddenly the next blast hit the school alley. I saw dozens of students fall on the ground. People started to take the dead and wounded to hospital.
The targeted school is located in Hazara's residential area, where the community has been bearing the brunt of blind terror attacks. People are now calling on the Taliban to tighten the security and protect all Afghans.
I call on the Taliban to tighten security across our country and protect those at risk. My sister and her children are living here. They are horrified. I don't want this situation to continue. Besides, we can't dare to send our children to educational centers. When will poor Hazaras live in peace? They have long been falling victim to terrorism.
The Taliban, on the other hand, claim that they won't let such attacks repeat in the future, vowing to bring the orchestrators to justice.
First of all, we extend our sympathy to the families of the victims. Secondly, our intelligence and security forces are investigating the incident and will hold those who martyred our innocent citizens accountable. I promise our Hazara brothers that we will take urgent steps to protect them against our common enemy. We will also pay major attention to the security of their public places.
Last year, at least 58 people were killed and more than 100 injured in a bomb attack in a girls' school in the same Shia neighborhood in Kabul.
In recent years, suicide attacks in western Kabul have taken the lives of hundreds of civilians, including students. People here say they're exhausted by growing violence and terrorism. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
In a Twitter post, the head of Yemen's national negotiating delegation, Mohammed Abdussalam, said since the entry of the UN brokered truce, the Saudi-led coalition has prevented flights from reaching the Sana'a International Airport and obstructed the entry of fuel ships to the port of
Hodeidah.
We have entered the third week of the truce, while Sana'a Airport has not been opened yet, as it was supposed. Unfortunately, no commercial flight has arrived, even though the airport is technically ready. We do not know what are the reasons that prevent the opening of the airport until now, but what we do know is that the Saudi-led coalition has not adhered to any agreements since the start of its war on our country in 2015.
Observers say the Saudi violations are threatening the UN brokered agreement, which is supposed to build for a comprehensive political solution. They are calling on the United Nations to intervene and open Sana'a Airport. In the beginning of April, the UN envoy for Yemen, Hans Grundberg, announced a two-month truce. The agreement includes opening Sana'a Airport for two flights per week and allowing Yemen's fuel ships to arrive at Hodeidah Port. For 7 years of war and siege, the United Nations has always been providing the political cover-up for Saudi Arabia's violations of international law. But now that it has brokered an agreement, it should take real measures to force Riyadh to do its part of the truce and open Sana'a Airport. Abdulatif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
Dozens of people gathered in the Lebanese capital, Beirut, to mark Palestinian Prisoners' Day, a day when resistance factions and their supporters stand in solidarity with Palestinian prisoners held in Israeli jails.
On this day, which marks the Day of Palestinian Prisoners, I am certain that the people of the Arab and Muslim worlds, as we see in this gathering, will show the true unity with the resistance and the path of the resistance, especially with the issue of the prisoners and Al-Quds, which are the emblem of the Palestinian struggle.
Hezbollah Deputy Secretary General Sheikh Naim Qasem stressed that one cannot be truly with Palestine if they are not with the resistance.
It has become clear that whoever is with Palestine should be with the resistance.
anyone who has declared that he is with Palestine but hasn't taken one practical step in supporting the resistance is not truly with Palestine. Military resistance comes first. The other forms of resistance back and help to serve the actual resistance with arms.
He recalled that after the victory of the Islamic Revolution in Iran, late Imam Khomeini took the decision to close the Israeli embassy and reinstate the Palestinian embassy before declaring he was with Palestine. Liberating Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails has become a struggle for all resistance factions as it is linked directly to the Palestinian cause. They stress that liberating prisoners can only be realized completely by liberating Palestine. Officials of Palestinian resistance groups Hamas and Islamic Jihad considered that history has proven that only armed struggle can be a path to liberating both Al-Quds and the prisoners who continue to suffer from Israel's aggressive policies. More than 4,400 Palestinian prisoners are currently held in Israeli jails. Minors and women are among 500 detainees under the so-called administrative detention policy, under which they are held without charge or trial for an indefinite time period. Maryam Saleh, Beirut.
Italians have slammed Israel's continued pursuit of repressive, violent practices against Palestinians following the killing of several Muslims, including a teenage boy, by Israeli security forces at the Al-Aqsa Mosque, a major holy site in Al-Quds, last week. Tensions between Israelis and Palestinians have been running high over the past weeks, with Israeli forces carrying out numerous raids in the West Bank, which led to the deaths of a number of Palestinians. The latest round of violence by Israel on Monday saw its soldiers forcing their way into the Al-Aqsa Mosque and removing worshippers from its courtyards in order to allow settlers to exclusively mark the Passover holiday into the compound.
Once again, during Ramadan, a new aggression against Palestinians by the Israeli regime. This time they caught off guard men, women and children who were praying at the Al-Aqsa Mosque. This again has shown the nature of the Israeli regime and the complacence of the international community.
Last year, during Ramadan, similar violence broke out, sparking the biggest conflict in years between Palestinian resistance movements and Israel, an 11-day war which only ended following intervention by international mediators. The violence against Palestinians at the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound in the occupied old city of Al-Quds came at a particularly sensitive time. Ramadan this year coincided with the Christian Holy Week, which ends today, Monday, the second day of Eastertide. Catholic faithful have strongly condemned the latest killing of Palestinians by Israeli security forces.
For the umpteenth time, it is a provocation by Israel. This action were just a fresh provocation. There is a lack of respect for others' beliefs. During Easter time and Ramadan, we have to be more thoughtful.
Tensions there are due exclusively to Israeli occupation policy. However, the international community seems to have lost interest in the conflict. By not taking any side, the Italian government is supporting Israel in practical terms.
Last meeting between Italian and Palestinian authorities took place in December when Palestinian Foreign Minister Riyad al-Maliki met his Italian counterpart Luigi Di Maio on the sidelines of the 7th edition of the Rome Med Dialogues Conference. Other than reiterating Italy's traditional support for the Palestinian Authority, Di Maio reaffirmed Italy's commitment to a just, sustainable and negotiated two-state solution between Palestine and Israel as the key to stability and prosperity in the enlarged Mediterranean. Max Civili, Rome.
People in the port city of Karachi hit the streets to voice their outrage at the ouster of the elected government. The protesters say the U.S. conspired against their country. While Imran Khan never sought sore ties with any nation during his short-lived premiership.
Former Prime Minister Imran Khan has accused Biden administration in Washington for toppling his government in Pakistan, for not towing U.S.'s line on foreign policy.
Khan said that his life is in danger, but he prioritizes Pakistan's independence.
independence over his life.
Imran Khan had twice tweeted, or in fact more, but he had a clear clear message for the U.S. administration that we are partners in peace. We will always be partners in peace. We are partners in trade. We'll always be partners in trade with the whole world, with everybody. But we will not take dictation from anybody.
I'm here specifically to do my part in wanting and executing the Pakistan that we all want. And I think Imran Khan represents a vision of that Pakistan. And I personally, honestly think it's not his job alone to do this. It's our job, our responsibility to come out and do this for ourselves. That's why I'm here.
We've gathered here because of the sovereignty of Pakistan, and we want Pakistan to get justice and Imran Khan to get justice, and we don't believe in the fake government.
Khan says U.S. diplomats started meeting some Pakistani officials 4 months ago, adding that Pakistan's ambassador to the U.S. was threatened.
We've gathered here to fight for a more democratic Pakistan, to fight for a free and independent Pakistan, to fight for a Pakistan that doesn't get bullied. That is our main reason for being here, for standing up for Pakistan, its sovereignty, and its integrity.
We're just here to support Imran Khan in this freedom fight. We are here to just, we don't accept the foreign government. We're here to support our Prime Minister Imran Khan. He came here with the elected votes, our votes.
It's a protest for democracy. It's a protest for justice and for rights and human rights. The world, people choose their own leaders. Every citizen has a choice, has a right to choose their own people who they want to govern over them.
Khan has called for a snap election and urged an investigation into what he calls the U.S.'s plot to topple his government. He has become the first Pakistani prime minister to be removed from office through a non-confidence vote by the parliament. Mohammad Turi, Karachi.
Palestinians rallied in the besieged Gaza Strip on Sunday to mark the 48th anniversary of Palestinian Prisoners' Day. Palestinian Prisoners' Day commemorates the first Palestinian prisoner exchange deal with Tel Aviv in 1974. Statistics show that Israeli forces have arrested nearly 1 million Palestinians since 1967. The rally was organized by all Palestinian factions who came together to express their solidarity with the prisoners in Israeli jails.
On Palestinians' Prisoners' Day, we call on all international organizations, especially the Red Cross, to fulfill their obligations towards Palestinian prisoners. The Red Cross has failed to protect Palestinian prisoners and has remained silent while Palestinian prisoners continue to suffer inside Zionist jails.
Israel currently holds around 5,000 Palestinians in its prisons and detention centers, including women and minors. Protesters shouted slogans against Israel and expressed their unwavering support for the prisoners.
For us, every day is a prisoner's day because Palestinian prisoners are our heroes and they live in our hearts and minds. We pray for them, especially during this holy month of Ramadan, to remain strong in the face of their Zionist captors.
Palestinian prisoners have gone on hunger strike several times in recent years to draw attention to their plight. Activists called on Palestinian armed wings to capture more Israeli soldiers in order to swap them with Palestinian prisoners.
Only capturing more Israeli soldiers can bring about the liberation of Palestinian prisoners. Armed resistance is the best option to help secure the release of the prisoners because our enemies only understand the language of force.
According to prisoners' advocacy groups, Palestinian prisoners continue to face a wide range of human rights violations in Israeli jails and detention centers.
As they mark Palestinian Prisoner Day, people here accuse the international community of turning a blind eye to the continued Israeli crimes against thousands of Palestinian prisoners. Ashraf Shanan, Gaza.
The French presidential election was trending as an easy victory for the incumbent, Emmanuel Macron, until the unrest in Ukraine began. Macron's insistence on long-term sanctions for Russia exploded already high inflation. That's resulted in widespread hardship, resentment, and tough assessments of Macron's economic record.
It's clear that Macron has not improved the quality of life for the French. He's not responsible for all the problems he's had to deal with, but it's clear there's a big difference between what he's promised and what he's delivered.
The French election may come down to this. Who do voters feel will protect the average person from the economically explosive effect of long-term sanctions on Russia over the unrest in the Ukraine? It's not a question the mainstream media wants to discuss, but it is top of mind for the average person.
Polls show the race is now a dead heat, with a soaring Marine Le Pen of the National Rally taking an opposite tack, promising to oppose Russia energy sanctions, which are wreaking havoc with gas, heating, and food prices. As the challenger, Le Pen doesn't have a record to defend, and she's escaping anger over the economic crisis.
Macron has absolutely not done a good job on protecting our purchasing power. The middle class feels that Macron has contempt for the middle class, and they also feel a great contempt for the neoliberal globalist banker Macron.
Macron's far-right economic policies provoked the unprecedented yellow vest protests in 2018. He only made minor concessions before turning to brutal repression, and the coronavirus crisis only aggravated economic inequalities.
Macron needed to go much further in his efforts to reduce prices. It's unbearable to go to the supermarket these days. Even people who make an honest salary say that they are having trouble.
Abstention may reach record highs because many voters wonder if Le Pen would actually deliver on her populist economic promises. Her party has historically been aligned with neoliberalism as well. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
Imam Ali, peace upon him, the barometer of belief. In the name of God, the compassionate, the merciful. Salam, everybody, and heartfelt condolences to you all on the start of the morning days of blessed Ramadan. Today, the 19th of Ramadan, is that tragic day in history when the barometer of belief and the supreme symbol of justice was fatally wounded while engrossed in the morning ritual prayer. Stay with us for a special feature in this regard. As a matter of fact, the grand man, after spending the first of the three grand nights of Qadr in prayer and worship, was struck in the Grand Mosque of Kufa by the poisoned sword of the renegade Abdurrahman ibn Muljam Muradi. Yet, despite the severity of the wound, the first phrase that came to the lips of the commander of the faithful was Fustu wa Rabbul Ka'ba. It means, by the Lord of the Ka'ba, I have succeeded. Let us try to present you a glimpse of the exemplary life of Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace upon him, the dearest ward, cousin, son-in-law, and divinely designated vicegerent of Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. Imam Ali, peace upon him, kept his pledge with God Almighty by tasting the elixir of martyrdom and departing in dignified manner from the mortal world. As the Noble Quran says in Ayah 23 of Surah Ahzab, among the believers are men who fulfill what they pledge unto Allah. Of them, some have fulfilled their pledge, and of them are some who still wait, and they have not changed in the least. Once during his discourse from the pulpit of the